This is the Bates Bobcast, our weekly podcast about the week that was in Bates Athletics. My name is Aaron Morris, and this week we're celebrating 150 years of Bates football and previewing the 2025 season for the Bobcats. Plus, women's golf and tennis are also getting their fall seasons underway. And hear from our Bobcats of the Week. That's coming up on the Bates Bobcast. The football team kicks off the 2025 season this Saturday at 1 p.m. when they host Amherst at Garcelon Field. Head coach Matt Coyne previews the 150th year of Bates football. It's here. It's game week. We're previewing the Bobcat football season with head coach Matt Coyne here on the Bobcast. And coach, first of all, before we talk about the team, it's 150 years of Bates football this year. 1875 was the first game Bates ever played. A very different sport back then. But take us through what it means to be celebrating this and what it means for you to be connecting with a lot of alums.
Oh, it's an unbelievable honor, and there's only a handful of teams that have even been able to celebrate this moment. 150 years, I believe the first game was Tufts, so for us to kick off the NESCAC and be one of the oldest teams in the NESCAC is pretty impressive. I know the alums are fired up. I think there's so much history within this program. It's really tough to celebrate in one evening, but you know, we're excited to welcome a plethora of alums back. We're going to have a great event, which will tie right into Saturday afternoon for our home opener against Amherst.
Excellent. And then, you know, just looking at this team after last year where you beat the eventual NESCAC champion, Wesleyan, you beat Middlebury here at Garcelon Field. How do you bottle those two wins and spread out that level of play, I guess, for an entire season? How do you, like, get this team to take the next step?
Yeah, I think it's part of the process that we've stayed true to throughout this. And obviously, we're building towards competing for a championship. And what last year did was realize that we can compete with those teams and we can win against those teams. Now, consistency comes down to, you know, discipline, execution, and experience. And now we're entering that phase of this process where we have a ton of starters back. You know, freshmen aren't going to have to impact our level of play on the field right away. They can be developed properly and into roles that they're capable of. And we have a lot of game experience. So I think that's the biggest piece. Is to put it all together week in and week out, it takes experience, discipline, and focus on who you are, what your identity is offensively, defensively, and special teams-wise, and really embodying that. And right now we have a really good hold on that and good leadership in that direction.
You have three captains, Sergio Beltran, who's a senior, and then you have a couple juniors in Ryan Linsky and Ryan Rozick, a running back and a linebacker, respectively. Take us through what makes these three such, you know, strong leaders for the program.
They've been through it from the beginning, and I think they're guys that have obviously showed their play, all conference players, and they've been through it through the tough times and through the happy times. You know, I think when you build through that, they've seen this culture. They've been the conductor of the train of changing the culture here, the expectations here, which we finally can talk about, and they're guys that are just, they do it all right. They're in the classroom, in the campus, in the community, obviously on the field. They've taken it to another level and built off what our previous leadership has set in stone and you know, really progressed our program.
Yeah, I mean, Linsky last year over 1,000 yards rushing. We only played 9 games in the NESCAC, so 1,000 yards in 9 games is a lot. I mean, what more can you say about it? It was such a breakout year for him. I know his first year he had a good season. He had a few injuries he was battling. Last year was healthy and really showed what he could do, right?
Yeah, I think Ryan's, you know, special player. Our team knows it. You know, we got to get four going. I think every team in the NESCAC knows it, and we're not afraid to talk about it. That's who we are. But Ryan really took the next step this offseason, you know, had a really great internship and did some training. And for us, we've seen that. I think what people don't realize is last year he was 8 months off of a full knee repair. So it was pretty impressive for him to be back that fast. And just now he has a, you know, a different twitch to him this year.
In the triple option offense at the quarterback position, what are you kind of looking for? Like, what makes a good quarterback for the triple option specifically? What do you emphasize to the guys in camp?
Just discipline and executing their reads and being decisive. I think the hardest part, and you know, we've had our quarterback competition going on, and it's been great with Jack Perry, Sean Green. We have a couple of really good freshmen that have really developed nicely, and Connor Hennessy and Jack Gilmore, and then an experienced guy, Matt Wiley, whose first year, you know, working at that position has really provided great leadership there. And what we talked about on camp is that, guys, you know, you got to be ready to go, because in a triple option offense, you know, you're one hit away from the next guy, so we have to have depth there, which we do. and just making decisive decisions in the run game. Obviously, in the pass game, that's a quarterback's, you know, MO traditionally, but now it's just different. We're reading coverage on the line rather than reading coverage on the second end. So be decisive, make the right decisions, and continue just to move the offense and never get bored. You know, that's what we talk about. I mean, you know, 4 yards to us is a 12-yard comeback completion on the sideline. So never get bored, understand your identity, and that's how you'll be successful.
Well, and also, I mean, never get bored is probably a mantra for the wide receivers also, right? Because you don't pass as much as maybe the wide receivers maybe necessarily would want. They always want the ball, right? But take us through what you emphasize to your wide receiver group about what they need to do within this offense.
Well, you talk about it. You know, you look at it firsthand. You know, you look at who, arguably to me, the best blocking wide receiver in the conference last year was Sergio Beltran. And that's a guy who, you know, does everything. You know, blocks, catches, runs. I think for us at that wide receiver position, it's more about just loving your teammates. Like, your opportunities will come, you know, as we get throughout the season and games and things like that. And for us, you know, really, you tell your level of respect for your teammates, your culture, by how you block for somebody else. You know, they know that the ball might not be in their hands, but they're a big product of why we're able to be successful. And obviously, as we head into the season, when you look at it last year, perimeter blocking is a huge thing for us, you know, especially in this offense. If we can execute there, we're going to have a chance to be successful in every single game we play.
Offensive line came together pretty well last year. A lot of returners up front also. I mean, tell me about the Hogs and how they're looking.
They just did a great job in the offseason. Weight room development. And I think now, you know, when you invest in that youth game experience and understanding what they're physically going up against, they know how to develop their bodies and minds in the offseason. Obviously, you know, Big John Antolik and Kevin McDonald have been starters from day one. They've got 18 games under their belts as rising juniors. Those are guys are the leaders of our offense of line, and but everybody's embodied it. I think, you know, even from numbers 1 through 10 of our O-linemen, 1 through 15, however many are out there, they've all taken the right steps under Coach Watt, and you know, I think they've developed nicely, and they got a better understanding now as we've gone into year two of this offense.
Who are our tight ends this year? Who do we got?
So we got Damian, obviously returning as a senior, Jake Walters, Bryce Carberry, and Nick D'Alessio. So guys that have been in the system. You know, Jake is going to work, you know, in multiple roles, but, you know, he's really invested in his body and you know, really taking the next step there. And, you know, so we feel good about our tight end group. They work really hard. And again, as most, as you say, with the receivers, they're an extension of the O-line as well, you know, and they've done a really good job for us.
Yeah, and this offense, almost everyone considered themselves somewhat of an offensive lineman, I guess, right?
Yeah, at some point, you know.
Obviously, you have a new offensive coordinator. He's been in the program, though, Owen Watrous. Tell us about, you know, him stepping into that bigger role for him. He's been the offensive line coach, and now he's coordinating that offense.
Yeah, he's done an unbelievable job, you know, having the spring to really settle in. We've added, you know, some great staff members as well. You know, Coach Johnson's joined us from Ithaca, and Coach Brown obviously has picked up the running backs and the tight ends now. And I think, you know, Coach Watt's ready for this position. You know, this is his time, and, you know, he's shown that throughout the preseason and heading into the season, spring ball. We just have a great relationship. Again, you know, it's not always yes, yes, yes. It's just more, you know, there's loyalty and trust that comes into it, and, you know, he's one of those people. And he's worked really hard, and, you know, this is his time, and he's going to do a great job with it.
All right, flip it over to the defense now. Let's start up front, defensive line. Who are some of the standouts?
Yeah, so for us, you know, obviously Jackson Collins returning, Shane Broughton returning, Josh, you know, big Josh, yep. 40 there. He's, you know, taking another year of development, and he's looking at him walk around. He looks great. All the guys look great. They have done a great job up front. You know, as we look at Ryan Kimmel, Cam Zimbranowicz, you know, we have some good depth there. Guys that have really developed, worked hard, and, you know, take the next step. We don't have to replace a ton from up front there. Obviously, losing Finn Duffy, he was a great player for us. You know, but, you know, interiorly, we feel really good right now.
Linebackers, I mean, Rozek's one of your captains, obviously. His production speaks for itself. I still remember the hit against Wesleyan to clinch that victory, but linebacking unit looking pretty good, too. I know you're really high on Kronk, who's a sophomore now, right?
Yeah, Carmel's had a great preseason. You know, same with Elias Scott. You know, we have some really good, you know, rising sophomores right now that have taken that next step. Again, a full year in the weight room, a full year understanding what we're trying to do. Obviously, Ryan's the heart and soul in the middle there, you know, and his play speaks for itself. He's an unbelievable leader, and we know he can run and tackle. So he's going to be, you know, the guy in the middle there that's holding it together. But, again, another year with this defense that has come back together. If you look at our back seven, you know, we lost one person, and up front, you know, one person as well. So it's like from the starting lineup. So a lot of experience, and we took a great step of growth.
I love the secondary because you've got two twins at safety, right? Major and Michael Spencer. That's got to be exciting.
Yeah, so both of them are here. Yeah, they're doing a great job. Obviously, you know, impact players for us. But the whole secondary, I think we've taken a good step there. You know, Sammy Marquez, Presley Green. You know, we got a bunch of guys that are working really hard in there that have really worked at the corner positions. But, yeah, having some twins back there, it's a pretty cool thing. And I'm just happy for them and their family that they get to play together and understand that. Sort of connection is pretty special for them and the family.
And Major Spencer is a transfer from a D1 program, East Texas A&M. That's kind of an interesting thing because we don't get tons of transfers here. So tell us, how does that kind of come together? How do you get a transfer up to Bates?
You know, his brother had a big role in it. You know,
yeah.
He understands, the relationship that myself and Mike have, you know, and now he's come up here, and obviously their relationship was a big factor in that. And, you know, we're just happy to have him, add him to the addition, another one of the family. It's been a good thing for us.
Special teams-wise, you got Marcos Ruiz as your place kicker. He's had a good career so far. He hasn't had a ton of opportunities, but he's converted them when he gets them, huh?
Mm-hmm. You know, Marcos is, you know, I trust him with everything.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, big kick in last year's game down at Wesleyan.
Yes.
You know, it's a huge, huge moment for him that should, you know, just give him the ultimate confidence. You know, he's reliable, very good kicker for us. We're very lucky to have him.
And then in general, the special teams unit, how do you work on that? You spend a lot of time on it in practice, right? What's, mm-hmm. what's kind of a point of emphasis to try to maybe have better results there, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, execution. You know, I think we just got to, you know, catch it, kick it, you know what I'm saying? So for us, it's just field position is so critical in games, you know, and mm-hmm. we work it, and just understanding that, you know, whether you're the punter, the snapper, the right wing, whatever it is, trust in the other 10 guys are going to do their job and do yours, you know. So it just comes down to that and execution because we've been pretty, you know, solid on that unit from a protection standpoint. And, you know, we're going to get there with the results on the kicking. Parker's done a great job this offseason, mm-hmm. Worked really hard at it. You know, we have full confidence, and it's a critical part of the game. We know that. We talk about it with our team all the time, especially the style we play, like in understanding who we are. Field position and punting has to be a weapon, you know, because it's going to play into how we win games.
Last year, you also opened against Amherst. It was at Amherst. Defensive battle. Obviously, you guys were still getting used to the option offense then. Do you feel maybe a little bit more ready this year, I guess, if you will?
Yeah. I mean, no doubt. Just having a full offseason of spring ball with it and guys just being able to understand it. I think what was tough, you know, last year was we had no spring ball with it, and we did it in preseason, which is a very crunch time. And they're a good team. So, you know, it's really tough to – you know, marry those two things together. So, you know, I think for us, we have just more confidence in it. We understand what that environment's going to be. We understand the opponent we're playing, and, you know, we understand it's going to be a dogfight.
Great. Any other thoughts you want to share on the upcoming football season? Anything you want to mention we haven't got to talk about yet?
Really excited for the 150th. You know, I just want to thank all the alums for all their support and changing this. There is a big of this part of the change in the culture, our administration, everybody that's helped with this event. It's a lot bigger than you can expect, and so there's a lot of hands that play in it. So just really excited to celebrate that and then, you know, go out and compete really hard on Saturday.
And a brand-new video board also.
100%.
Yeah. I just want to mention that. If you come to Garcelon Field this year, you'll see a brand-new video board. We got some cool things planned for that. Matt Coyne, head coach of the Bobcats, thanks so much.
Thank you.
The number 8 nationally ranked Bates field hockey team is 3-0 after defeating Southern Maine, Trinity, and Lynchburg last week. Junior defender Amy LaBelle scored the eventual game-winning goal against the Bantams, the first goal of her collegiate career. She also tallied an assist against USM and made a defensive save against Lynchburg. And Amy LaBelle is our female Bobcat of the week. Well, Amy, first of all, you're a junior now, but tell us, when you're looking at colleges, what made Bates the place for you?
Visiting Bates, I could really just tell the community was a great place to be. My parents went here as well as my brother, so I was very familiar with the campus and just knew that they all had great experiences here and just knew it was the place for me.
Did any of your relatives play any sports here?
My dad played lacrosse.
Oh, nice.
And I have a couple of cousins that went here as well, also playing lacrosse, but I'm the first one to play field hockey.
So tell us about how you got into field hockey as a sport growing up.
I started playing in middle school because my older sister played, and I thought it was so cool and loved watching her play. So I was like, I want to do that too.
Were you always a defender?
Yes, pretty much. I played the defensive mid line for my club team and for high school. Played midfield here at the beginning and then moved back to my home base there on the defensive line.
Well, speaking of the defense, it's a very strong defensive unit, very experienced group. What's this group like?
We're tight on and off the field, which obviously really helps. And we're just going to be there to back each other up no matter what. We are very strong together, and we know how each other play, so we're comfortable with each other, and that always helps us.
What are your thoughts 3 games in? How's it going so far?
It's going really well. Obviously, there's always room to grow and always things that we need to work on, but we've started out really solid, and it's just only up from now.
Well, this past weekend, you obviously had the big NESCAC win at Trinity. The very next day, though, you have to turn around and play a ranked opponent. So what was that turnaround like, and how did you get the 2 wins there?
It was definitely a tough turnaround. We were really tired, but just got to stay hydrated, fuel up, and just got to go out and grind. Got to get it done.
Obviously, the turf at Bates gives us a big advantage. A lot of teams that come in aren't familiar with true AstroTurf. Was that an adjustment for you, or did you play it in high school?
No, I actually played on a grass field in high school.
Oh, okay. Yeah, a lot of high schools are grass. Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely definitely an adjustment, but the game's just so much more fun on the water-based Astro because it's just a lot faster.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you're delivering the inserts on Pelicorns this year. Take us through how, when Coach told you that, and how do you prepare?
I have the drag down for the insert, but I just have to get it to where it's supposed to go as fast as I can and as accurately as I can, and then just get to that post and stay low.
Tell me a little bit about this group after what happened last year with such a great season, right? Elite Eight, but obviously I think everyone's hungry for more, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, we didn't reach the top last year, so there is more room to grow, and everybody's still hungry, but we did some work with the rowing team and the rowing coach a little bit at the beginning of the season, and they had this great analogy about Mount Katahdin. It's like every year you climb the mountain again with a new group of people, and it's really important to use the people that you currently have. Obviously, keep your past successes in mind, but don't use that as an expectation. So start the season off new with your new crew and climb the mountain all over again together.
Well, not only in terms of that mentality, but you also got into the actual boats.
Yes.
If I saw correctly on Instagram.
Yes.
How was that, rowing?
All I have to say is that I have a lot of respect for the rowers. It is quite hard. But now we have obviously worked together and bonded over that together. So we know that field hockey, obviously, and rowing, it's a team effort. Nobody, as we've been saying, can balance the boat individually. We have to do it together. That really helped us for the season as well.
And you got your first collegiate goal, if I'm not mistaken, right? You scored it at Trinity in that 2-1 win. It was the eventual game winner.
Yep.
Take us through that play, and how did you score?
So it was off of a corner. Deliver the insert, obviously, as fast as I can, as accurately as I can, and get to that post. Stick on the floor so that you're ready for it when the ball comes to you. And that's what happened. You got to be there to clean up and just put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, I'm curious because the person who's actually taking the shot, I mean, because you're right by one of the posts,
yes,
basically.
Yep.
The shot has to be low, right? So you
yes.
know, I mean, it can't be high.
Right.
And so you know kind of where it's going to be. The shooter probably tries to mix it up a little bit, but
yeah.
I mean, is that a play where you know it's coming to you, kind of?
Well, in this instance, I didn't know that the ball was coming to me. So it got blocked and deflected a
gotcha.
Little bit.
Yeah.
And then it was able to get through to my post. And I don't – obviously, your team works so hard to get the ball down that low and through all the people. So you really just have to capitalize on the opportunity.
Any other thoughts you wanted to share on the season so far and what you're most looking forward to here as we move forward?
I'm just looking forward to how we grow and what more we can achieve this season. I know we have a great group of girls. We all bring our own talents to the table, and – It's going to be another awesome season.
Number 8 nationally ranked Bobcats are 3-0. Amy LaBelle with a goal and an assist last week. Also a defensive save there against Lynchburg. Thanks so much for joining us on the Bobcats. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Aaron.
The men's soccer team beat St. Joseph's at home and played Trinity to a 1-1 draw on the road last week. First year Chris Bianco impressed in his first 2 matches as a Bobcat, scoring a goal against the Monks and another against the Bantams, making him our male Bobcat of the week. Well, Chris, welcome to the Bobcast. First year for the men's soccer team and men's basketball, I understand. Very exciting. Yep. 2-sport athlete here at Bates. Tell me a little bit about growing up. Tell us about soccer. How did you first get into that sport? How do you realize, you know, you could probably play it at the next level?
I always grew up playing soccer, never club soccer, though. I used to just play for my school, St. Andrews. And I was taking basketball really seriously, and I was thinking about quitting soccer. And I had a coach, two coaches, Coach Bork and Coach Alessio at St. Andrews. And they made me keep playing, and I'm glad I did, and I took it to the next level.
And balancing those 2 sports, obviously, it was a challenge, right? How'd
yeah,
you do that?
It was. I would just say, like, trusting your body and knowing how much your body can handle and having a good group of people around you and trusting God. I'm a big believer in God. And I think if you love something so much, like I love those two sports, you're going to find a way to manage the time and do both of them.
Great. When you were looking at colleges, what made Bates the place for you? How'd you navigate the process? Because obviously you're dealing with two sports, right? And most athletes are coming here for one sport.
Yeah. I would say I knew I wanted to play both sports in college. So coming here, knowing I had the chance to play both, and I really liked the coaches and they made me feel like I was family already. And they said that the two sports wouldn't be a problem. So I just went with it and I'm glad I did.
So you've got a few soccer matches under your belt. You have another one. We're talking on Tuesday here tonight. But yeah. You've scored a goal in both of them.
Yeah.
So how exciting is that? A couple goals to start your career like this.
It's pretty exciting. I wouldn't say that I'm surprised by it, but I just say that I put in the work and I trusted the work and I trusted God again. And everything that was coming for me, I kind of made myself build it into it, kind of. Yeah.
So you scored a goal there at Trinity. For those of us who didn't see the game, it was on the road. Take us through the goal. How did it develop?
Actually, the play before, I missed an opportunity that I thought I should have scored on. And Coach Brewster is always big on next play, next play, next play. And I was just like, all right, keep my head up. I'm going to get another chance. I'm going to finish this one. And that's what I did. And I had my teammates' backs and scored for them.
Great. What's your first impression of college soccer? How does it compare to where you're coming from?
I would say it's a lot more fast, a lot more physical. It's kind of like you have to be ready for the moment, because like in high school, I feel like I had a lot of chances to score. And now, as you can see on my stats, I usually get like one shot a game and you have to finish that chance in order to stay on the field and to keep your team in games or to make your team win a game.
Yeah, both of your shots that went on goal went in. So far, you're coming off the bench. What's that like to, you know, provide a spark like that for the team?
I would say that Coach gave me the opportunity that he said that you're going to play, and he said you got to work for your spot, and he told me today that I'm starting tonight.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So I wouldn't say, like, coming off the bench I would think as a negative thing. I'm just saying when I come off the bench, I'm going to prove myself in the game so Coach doesn't have a chance to take me out.
Excellent. And then what's this team like? Obviously, you know, pretty big roster, pretty big group. What's the group like?
I would say since I've been here 2 weeks, this team's already a family. And, like, we all care about each other. We all love each other, and we all have each other's backs. And we're all trying to get to the same goal, which is win a championship. And it's a very selfless team where everybody's just trying to win a soccer game. It's not individual. Like, if I score, I'm scoring for the team. If someone else scores, they're scoring for the team. It's not for themselves, I would say.
We did an Instagram Live interview with you after the St. Joseph's game. What was the inside joke at the end? Can you tell us that?
Yeah. So my first, like, couple practices, I was on the sideline, and I was standing next to a couple people, and we were scrimmaging. And before I was going into the scrimmage, I was like, it's CB time. I'm going to score in the scrimmage. And it just kind of, everybody kind of ran with it and thought it was super funny. So, and then I put it on the billboard at the stadium.
Oh, nice.
In my celebration. Yeah.
So CB time, you said that out loud, not just to yourself.
Yeah, I said that out loud.
Now, do you do that every time you come in the game now, CB time?
Not when I come in the game. If I score, I'll do it.
Okay, gotcha. Nice. Well, any other thoughts on, you know, the college experience so far? You know, you're a few weeks in. Classes just started. What's it been like so far?
I'm really enjoying it. I think it's fun. I think it's good to – I think I'm good at managing my time. Mm. So that's been a big part of it, and just getting all the work done in class and – putting my all into my sports, I would say.
Excellent. Chris Biakko, first year forward for the men's soccer team. We'll be seeing him in our basketball season as well. Very exciting. Thanks so much for joining us on the Bobcast, our male Bobcat of the week.
Thank you.
In other Bates athletics news, the volleyball team earned a pair of wins last week over USM and Keene State, while women's soccer won a 2-1 thriller at Husson before dropping a road contest at Trinity. Meanwhile, two more sports begin their fall seasons this week, with women's tennis headed to the Vassar Invitational and women's golf competing at Husson. Here's women's tennis head coach Deepak Sharma to give us a look at his team. Women's tennis fall schedule gets started this weekend at Vassar. We have Deepak Sharma, head coach of the Bobcats, joining us here on the Bobcast to give us a preview. And you got three events basically this fall, all of them on the road. Take us through what you're looking for from your team, what you're hoping to see at these events, and how are they similar, how are they different? Because I feel like they're somewhat different events.
Well, we have four new players, so I think it's just with three abroad too, it's just trying to get the team a little cohesion. So nothing beats a good road trip to do that. So we wanted to get play started right away. So with Vassar, it's one of the earlier tournaments that we've had before. So I think it's just good to get everybody in action, kind of playing some doubles and singles, seeing how everybody does in competition. You know, ITAs is a little bit of a heavy hitting competition a couple weeks later with all the best teams in the region there. So that could be, it could be very interesting. It also could be a little bit intimidating. So I think the Vassar invite gets everybody used to seeing other uniforms and other players, and ITAs will be really interesting. And then we're going to wrap it up with an October date at Hamilton, which is a bit of a far drive, but wanted to get the new players used to it. I mean, it's part of the conference and stuff, so it would be a really good weekend to get out there, play some competition against some other schools as well that we don't normally play besides Hamilton, but like St. Lawrence might be there. And so it's just good to kind of mix it up a little bit between the three, see some different levels of competition at the same time, mix it in with ITAs, which is kind of a heavy-hitting tournament.
You're working with a couple seniors this year. You've got Grace LaFountain and Bella Saul, who I know were abroad last fall. You got to coach them in the spring a little bit, but you're still kind of learning about them a little bit, learning about some of the team because it's your second year. But, yeah, you do have students going abroad sometimes.
And I'll take it one step further. I mean, Bella's the only one who really was, you know, in the starting lineup last year consistently and stuff. So, but Grace has been amazing, and so has Bella in terms of, you know, working with the team and putting themselves out there and making sure that everybody's, you know, we keep the culture alive from last year's team. And so Bella and Grace have been amazing to work with. I have a lot of respect for both of them and just what they bring to the table and how much passion they have for the team and for Bates. And they've both been playing pretty well this fall too as well. So it's been good to see. And so we're just trying to pick up from last year, but they're going to have their own spin to the culture of the team that I hope that they can add to it, which is going to be sort of like the Grace and Bella flavor, plus with the four new players, plus with the three. So it's going to be a different team and a different culture, but I think that they're off to a great start with just kind of putting their own stamp on it.
So, yeah, you mentioned four new players, four first years. How are they adjusting so far in the few time? How long have you been able to practice yet?
Well, we had about a week of practice. Yeah,
okay.
They've been amazing to work with. I mean, I think there's always going to be a little bit of a learning curve for both sides. But they've jumped right in, and I think that that's what's been exciting about this is I've gotten to know them over the course of the past year, and they're all, again, just very similar to the players who have been here for a long time, just excited to get on the court, excited to compete, excited to do right by Bates and, you know, on and off the court. And I think it's just really exciting to kind of see them, and they've been a pleasure to work with. Pretty seamless, feels like, so far. Like, I feel like I've known some of them for a long time, and so it's been great to work with them, and I think they all bring unique, I guess, skill sets to the court and stuff. So it'd be really interesting to see how this all plays out, which is why those fall tournaments are really important to kind of see where they, what we need to work on, and then also what they're good at.
I know you've been out and about recruiting, doing a lot of recruiting. What's your kind of focus there in terms of what kind of athletes you're looking to bring in here to Bates?
Yeah, first and foremost, it's like team first mindset. You know, it's culture, and it's always going to be about, for three things for me is like, it's a passion for tennis. You'd be surprised how many times you go to these tournaments or showcases, and it's probably in all sports where you're like, oh, this person looks like they're maybe a little bit burned out and they're not really quite into it. So passion for tennis. Second thing is passion for team. We're an individual sport, so it's a little bit different. So people have to be really understanding that you're just one component. So it's really kind of teaching that side of things. And the third thing is passion for Bates. So we are a destination school and not really a backup school for anybody. So we're a destination school. So for those who want to play in the NESCAC, want to play at a high level, we're looking for people who want to do that and receive the rigor both academically and tennis-wise. So that's kind of what we're looking at, and we're getting some really, really strong interest. And so whether it's globally, abroad, or it's domestically as well. So it's exciting. We have a lot of visits coming up, which, you know, the players are doing their best to kind of keep up with that, plus their schoolwork, plus the tennis. So with a lot of visits coming up, we'll hope to just continue to elevate and grow the program.
Well, last year, in your first year, you had a signature win over, at the time, number 16, nationally ranked Williams there at Merrill Gym. That type of victory, does it kind of show you what the potential is? I mean, it stands out last year because I think it was probably the best win. The team had three NESCAC wins, but Williams is always a tough opponent. First time I think the team had ever beaten Williams. And so what did that win do, you think, for the program or for these athletes?
I think it's a belief. I think it's the belief that we could compete with anybody in the NESCAC. And, you know, we were unranked. It's just so you know, there's 340 schools that play Division III tennis.
Wow. 340?
340 play Division III tennis.
Okay.
So, you know, with that win, we catapulted to number 37 in the country. So we just play in a tough conference. So, but it shows it's a sign of things to come. It's a sign of the commitment that I think the players have, that they want to elevate the program. And so they were able to do that last year. And Williams is a blue blood of Division III. They're national champions. They've done a great job. They're well coached. It's just an amazing win for the program. And I think it just sort of is a stepping stone. So it's in the past now, and we have to kind of, you know, we hold on to it. We're proud of it. It's something that I hold dear to me. It was a special day for me as a coach to see your team play and perform like that. And it's time to also to turn the page and kind of use that and leverage that to show the new players, like, hey, this is how good we can become and this is how good we are. We just have to work together.
I know Iris Westmoreland is abroad this fall, but obviously she's a key player playing at the top of the lineup last year. What are you looking to see when she returns in the spring from her? I mean, what do you tell your players when they go abroad in the fall in terms of like the balance of like tennis and, you know, having the abroad experience?
I mean, we encourage. I mean, it's all about the balance here, and so we do encourage. I encourage. I didn't get a chance to do it when I was in college, so I definitely encourage like the study abroad. I got to give a lot of credit to the three players that went abroad. They've actually taken the initiative to stay in touch with me, and also to like, there's a WhatsApp group chat with the three of them, and like there's pictures being sent, and I think they're all taking their tennis seriously even while abroad. So I want them to enjoy their experience. I don't mandate anything for them to go abroad. I don't necessarily expect them to play, but those three have taken it upon themselves to tell me, and even, I could see it with Iris as well. She's actually sent me some photos of her playing and stuff, so she's taking it really seriously. She's obviously a great student and great player, but the fact that she's doing that abroad means a lot to me and means a lot to the program as well. So that's just the level of care and concern that those players have abroad for their tennis as well. So that's also what we're looking for, people who are serious about the sport, who are willing to do it while they're abroad. Again, it's not mandated, don't require it. So it's really cool to see that those three are just kind of running with it, taking the initiative for that. That's been awesome.
Great. Well, any other thoughts you wanted to share about, you know, the upcoming fall season, this tournament in particular this weekend, perhaps we haven't got to talk about yet?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, like, you know, come on out and support your Bobcats. I mean, like, again, the match versus Williams is a taste of things to come. I mean, you know, we have all the new players, and we just have a great system that we're building out here. And I just look forward to kind of continue to work with them. And I think that it's, you know, we're looking for all the support on campus as possible. For it was only 10 of them, so we need the Bobcats to rally. And so I'm very excited for what's to come and just looking to get that support. Last year, we had a lot of support. I mean, I remember President Jenkins coming by for the Williams win, and, you know, it was just great to kind of see the attention for the program that they deserved. And so I would like to kind of, you know, follow that up. And 31 sports on campus, you got a lot of choices, but you got one women's tennis team.
Yep. And if you're an alum who lives in Poughkeepsie, check them out this weekend. They'll be there.
Yeah, so Vassar, I mean, I think a lot of parents, you know, like I think Bella's parents are coming. She's from Brooklyn, New York. So, I mean, it's Vassar, so it's in that Poughkeepsie, New York City area. So if you're in that area and you're an alumni, please come up and visit us. We'd love to kind of say hi and connect with you at the Vassar Invite. We'll be there on Saturday and Sunday.
All right, Deepak Sharma, head coach of the women's tennis team. Thanks so much for joining us on the Bobcast. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Aaron.
We are happy to welcome new director of women's golf, Ian Gould, to Bates. Gould and the women's golf team have an exciting season ahead with a couple tournaments in Maine, including this Saturday's Husson Invitational. Gould tells us about his background and why he's so excited to be at Bates.
I did not play golf in college, but I grew up in a golf family. My uncle was a golfer, my mom a golfer. Focused when I was young, you know, had the hand-me-down sets, all mismatched clubs, but by the time I got into college, got more serious about it. After college, of course, kept wanting to compete, play in competitive events and rounds and stuff like that. So been a golfer for last 30 years.
30 years of golfing, but how did you decide you wanted to coach golfers?
Yeah, my son got into golf as well.
Okay.
So as he was playing, I wanted to coach more and more, got involved with his high school team, and here I am.
And now coaching college golfers for the first time?
It is, yeah.
So what's the experience been like so far?
It's been amazing. Bates is just such a great community. Will was so welcoming when I did my interview. All the women on the team are excellent, great attitudes. You could tell the commitment in the team. And the community here at Bates is just phenomenal. And I knew right when I interviewed that this is what I wanted to do.
Yeah, what appealed to you about the position, like when you saw it was open, you know?
Yeah, the love of golf, of course, and loving to coach, loving to be around that atmosphere of competitive golf, just doing it as an everyday position. I constantly am and thinking about it and talking about it, so it's just a natural progression.
Martindale Country Club is our course, our home course, to practice on it a lot. I assume you've played there many times?
Yes, I have. Wonderful course, great people there. Interesting layout, so it really is challenging. And I think it really bodes well for the courses that we play in that there's no easy shot out there. Everything's a challenge. You really got to think the course and play it strategically.
So the first tournament, as we mentioned, is this weekend, the Husson Invitational. It's a one-day event up at Bangor Municipal Golf Course. What are you looking forward to seeing most from your team this Saturday here?
I'm looking for a repeat, hopefully, of last
year. That's right.
Yeah, no, last year we started off the season with
first
a win.
Place,
would love to see that again. And all the women on the team are just looking for a competitive round, ready to kick the season off right. And I just can't wait to see what we can do in that environment.
I'm curious because obviously these women have been playing a long time. You've been coaching a long time. You're new though to Bates. So when you're evaluating, you know, them as golfers, how much is it like, okay, you know, you might see something like, does that work for them? Or is, you maybe wouldn't recommend that. How do you kind of balance that?
Yeah, so I love to meet with each individual woman on the team to kind of get what their feedback is. What do they like from a coach? Do they like them hanging around, watching the round, or just leaving them alone and talking about the round after? Preparation to me is very important. So that's one thing that I'll focus on is making sure that the team's prepared to play every course that we possibly can.
Great. And your captains are Meher and Kendall. Tell us a little bit about them and what makes them such strong leaders.
Two great women on the team, recommended by others on the team. So that was an easy add to the team. Exceptional leaders, have taken the bull by the horns and just put the team on their back to say, hey, you know, we're getting together tonight. We're having a team dinner. All those things that you look in a captain and the leadership that they bring to the program.
Terrific. And then we have some first years. How are they adjusting to college golf? You got two, looks like.
Yeah. Yep. So we have two, Emma and Sophia, yeah. Two great, another great addition to the program. Both learning the course as well. I think this is the first time they've ever seen Maine golf before and what Martindale has. So looking forward to what they can do on Saturday. And everybody's going to compete at that round up at Husson. So really looking forward to that.
Bangor Municipal Golf Course, what can you tell us about that?
It's a wide open track.
Okay. Yep.
Really not a lot of danger.
Yeah.
You know, plays well to the way that we strike the ball. Short game seems to be one of our strengths on the team. So everybody has wonderful short game, can putt, can chip, really plays to our advantage there.
So obviously your background coaching high school golfers, what's been the similarity differences coming to the college level?
The commitment here.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Everybody wants to compete. Everybody wants to do well. They all juggle their academic schedules as well to fit what we need for the program, how we can be successful, talking in day one that we want to strive to be NESCAC champions.
One really cool thing is the golf teams, both the women and the men, were recently featured with Golf Digest, and that it was sponsored content, but it was really cool with Adobe where they got to design like golf courses. I'm sure you saw that video. I always like to see some of your golfers on there.
That was amazing. Yeah. That was just an amazing video, and it was really cool just to kind of be part of that, to have that experience for these women on the team to have Golf Digest be part of this program is just amazing.
And then, you know, some of the returnees, we mentioned the two captains, but also you have Victoria Adams, you got Maddie, you got also Isabel Meltzer and Sarah Wicks. Tell us about these four returners. Obviously, they all got to compete last year, some at NESCACs and others in other tournaments as well.
They are all strong golfers.
Yeah.
I was really impressed. Our top five are going to be really strong. Mm. They all strike the ball really well. They all are well around the greens. You know, we've had some competitive practice rounds now. Where I'm kind of evaluating all the talent, and it is just so close that everybody competes day in and day out.
And so you mentioned they're all going to play at Husson.
Yes.
That's an exciting opportunity.
Everybody's coming for our first event, so that's really exciting, and I can't wait to see how everybody competes.
Yeah, a chance for you to do some more evaluation, but in an actual tournament setting.
Exactly.
Excellent. Well, any other thoughts you want to mention about this team? What I'd look forward to this fall? Obviously, your first year.
I think we can compete with all the best schools in the NESCAC, and hopefully, you know, in the spring when the NESCAC championship is, that we're competing in that as well. We have a beautiful facility here, an indoor facility, so we'll be in the off season really tuning in our swings, getting ready for the spring. But really, my expectation is that we're going to compete at the highest level there is. I really fell into a great program. The recruitment has been excellent. The women that we have on our team play at a high level and could probably play at D1 level for some of them. So it's really, really exciting to see what we have in store for the future.
It all starts this Saturday. Husson Invitational up in Bangor, Maine at Bangor Municipal Golf Course on the 13th here of September. They'll be back in Maine for the Polar Bear Shootout in October. And, of course, if you live down by Cape Cod, you'll want to check out the NEIGA Championship. That's the premier event of the fall in middle of October, the 18th and 19th. I want to welcome again our new Director of Women's Golf, Ian Gould, to Bates. And thank you so much for joining us here on the Bobcast.
Thanks for having me.
As we mentioned earlier, this is the 150th anniversary of Bates football, and the celebration kicks off this weekend. More than 100 alums will be back on campus, including many from the class of 1969. That class made a name for themselves with four straight winning seasons, including a pair of outright CBB championships. Jeff Sturgis was the center for those teams, and he joins the Bobcast this week to share his memories of his days as a Bobcat. Jeff, first of all, thank you so much for joining us on the Bobcast, and I love the fact that not only did you attend Bates and play football, your dad attended Bates and played football and went to the Glass Bowl. Tell me about your memories growing up hearing stories from your dad about his time as a Bobcat.
Well, my dad was in high school when Pearl Harbor happened, and so after he graduated, he went out into the Navy and went to the South Pacific. Started at Guadalcanal, ended up at Okinawa, island hopped with the Seabees. But he got into the V-12 program towards the end of the war. And the V-12 program was a program to get Navy men through college and into the officer corps. So he came back before the war ended and ended up going to first Princeton, then Tufts, and finally ended up at Bates, which was nice because my mother, his high school sweetheart, had gone to Bates during the war and graduated in 46. So my dad was a student here in 46 when the team went undefeated under coach Ducky Pond, and went to the Glass Bowl. My earliest memories of Bates are when my dad told me about those times and actually brought me over to Bates, took me on the football team, took me on the football field,
yeah.
And through the locker rooms. And I was 5 or 6 or something like that. And that's when I decided I was going to play football at Bates. He was not a starter on the team, didn't play much at all. He was a sub. But he told me stories of people like Art Blanchard, who ended up, I think, being, even though Bates lost the Glass Bowl, was ended up being the MVP. So his stories of that group were interesting. A couple of interesting stories he told. One was that originally they all traveled out by train, and they were only going to take the starters and the backups. And my dad visited the coach and the AD because he was one of the scrubs, and he advocated that they should take the whole team because more than anything, the backups were the one who held the blocking dummies so that the starters could perfect their technique. So the college allowed them all to go. The other interesting story is these were all mostly veterans, men, mid-20s to late 20s, and they'd been all over the world fighting the war. And my dad said he felt that was a good thing, but sometimes a detriment, because he said they partied pretty hard on the way out to Toledo, Ohio, and he wondered if they hadn't partied as much, whether they might, and they had a great game. I think they only lost by less than a touchdown.
Yeah, it was 21-12. Yeah, it was a good game. Yeah.
So, and anyway, he felt that maybe less partying might have led to a better performance that day.
Yeah, who knows? A great what if, right? So for you, you already decided at a young age you're going to be a Bobcat.
Yep.
And when that actually came to fruition, what was that experience like first joining the team?
Well, it was great. You know, I decided I was going to Bates. I'm going to play football. So I played football all through junior high and high school. And the only school I applied to was Bates. And I got in early decisions in November, my senior year. So my senior year in high school was very nice. It was a dream come true. In no way was I a great football player. I wasn't on anybody's all-American list or all-league or all-whatever. I was good enough to start in high school and to start at Bates. And, you know, as Belichick says, I did my job. And so I was the starting long snapper for 4 years, and then I got to start regularly for my junior and senior years. And it was very satisfying. You know, people say, you know, if you have a dream and work hard enough at it, you can succeed. And it was very satisfying for me. You know, that 5 or 6 year old kid's dream came true on a good team.
Right. 4 good teams. Yeah. starting with 1965, where, you know, Jim Murphy, who we'll talk about in a bit, obviously got some playing time that year, got some starts. But the real star of that team was the fullback, Tom Carr. What are your memories of Tom Carr? Because it sounds like he might have been, you know, an interesting guy.
Yeah, he was. He was a big guy.
Yeah.
He was bigger than most of our linemen.
Yeah.
You know? And, yeah, you know, the key to our class was, of course, Jim Murphy.
Yes.
He ended up being the backup for the first couple of games and then moved into the starting position, you know, a little less than halfway through the year. Tom was a big fullback, and he was famous for never losing a yard in his 4 years at Bates. He wasn't elusive, but he just went up the line and pounded on people, including some of us who got in his way. He was also the punter. So my relationship with Tom was around the punting game, because he and I worked a lot practicing the punting game. And he was a good guy, and he was tough. When you got the ball, you always knew you were going to get 2 or 3 yards.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't going to get a 50-yard dash down up the middle of the field. You were going to get 2 or 3 yards, 5 or 6, and so forth. He was just so consistent, and it was nice to know on 3rd or 4th and short that he's probably going to pick up the touchdown for you. And I do have one anecdote about that.
Yeah.
I think it was against Bowdoin my freshman year. Again, I'm the long snapper, and I happened to get down quickly. The ball ended up in the end zone, and the Bowdoin player tried to bring it out, and he fumbled. Hmm. And I recovered the fumble. And I recovered the fumble like on the half-yard line. And my head was in the playing field. My body was in the end zone.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Had I been the other way around, right, I might have been able to push it over the goal line. But as it was, we recovered it on the half-yard line, and Tom Carr scored the touchdown on the next play. So I own part of that touchdown.
Nice. Well, Tom Lopez, your classmate, was telling me that all the freshmen were scared of Tom Carr. Senior, tough guy.
Yeah, you know, well, you know.
You worked him more directly, though. Sort of.
Yeah. But as freshmen, you know, we always tiptoed around the seniors a little bit. But I got to say this. Football at Bates, we hear a lot about hazing and all of that stuff. That wasn't the case here at Bates.
Right.
Football at Bates, the seniors treated us freshmen well.
Yeah.
And we always treated the freshmen well when we became seniors. So it was a pretty cohesive group, and we were all supportive of each other. And I think that atmosphere was promulgated by Coach Hatch, and I think it was one of the things that that helped us, because nobody was ostracized or picked on, and I think we were very supportive up and down the line.
Great. And then we mentioned, of course, Jim Murphy, who was being inducted into the Bates Athletics Hall of Fame this year, class of 69 as well, classmate of yours. I mean, we've talked about him before, but you were obviously the center. He was the quarterback. I mean, we kind of joked, and he mentioned this before, he wasn't the most mobile guy, but he could really throw it.
Yeah. You know, really, Murphy has got to be the centerpiece of our 4 years, because he was the quarterback all 4 years, and he could throw the ball with great accuracy. And he and Tommy Lopez were a great combination. But you're right. Murph wasn't the fleetest of foot. In fact, I think half the linemen probably beat him in a sprint. But and so that, you know, what that meant for us linemen is we had to keep a good pocket for him, because he knew he wasn't going to be able to scramble outside the pocket. And I can't even remember. I'm not sure we even had rollout or passes in our repertoire. It may have been one or two, but very rarely did Murph get outside the pocket. So it was incumbent on us linemen to make sure we kept the pocket clean for him.
And Murphy wasn't afraid to audible, if you will, and tell the coach, hey, we should run this instead.
Yeah. You know, Coach Hatch, I'm really fortunate I had good coaches in my career. And Coach Hatch, as far as I know, would listen to the players.
Yeah.
You know, hey, coach, this is working. This isn't. Hey, coach, I can take my man this way, not this way, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, Murph was not a shrinking violet by any stretch of imagination.
And Coach Hatch, Marine, I believe, in World War II. Like,
yes.
And what was he like as a coach?
I never knew he was a Marine when I played for him.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't what you'd caricature a Marine to coach to be.
Sure.
You know, I enjoyed playing for him. He was very good. He was very understanding. Low key, he wasn't a screamer and a yeller. He had gone to BU, and he had played a fullback there, I think. He was innovative as a coach, too. We did some different things. We had spread formations. We did Mickey Mouse passes. We did the hook and ladder. Mm. So, you know, we did some of that, what they call trickeration nowadays. And I enjoyed from him. And plus the coaches, you know, Flynn was the line coach, Bob Flynn.
Yeah.
And Chick Leahy was the backfield coach. You know, we did it with three coaches.
Yeah.
And Walt Savinsky, who people don't realize, I think was an All-American at Syracuse.
Yeah.
I think he still owns the the record for interceptions as a defensive back at Syracuse.
That sounds right, yes.
Of course, he's got his fame here,
right,
crossing track and cross country. But preseason, Walt would come out and work with a football team.
Yeah.
You know. But so we did it all with three coaches. And all the coaches were just, I thought, really good coaches. They taught us great techniques. And all of this emphasis over concussions and using your head, we were taught to slip our hat. We were not told to use our head and butt block.
Right.
And I think that was unusual back in those days, and in some ways is unusual these days. And so I thought we were, they taught us great techniques and didn't ask us to do things that were illegal or detrimental to our health.
Your class is interesting because 1965, your first year, that was the first year where there was no Maine State Series. It went right to CBB. So you never got to play in the Maine State Series, but you played CBB and had some success there, winning the outright title in 66 and 67. Do you remember what people talked about? Like maybe the older guys, were they mad they didn't get to play Maine anymore, or were they happy about that?
No, it wasn't much of a big deal.
Okay.
I know at the time because – you knew going up against Maine, you were going to lose. You know? I have a personal reason to rue that. Is one of my good friends and mentors, someone I worked with in education, Dave Wing, was the quarterback at University of Maine.
Right.
So we missed by a year playing against each other.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's interesting, though, because, you know, Maine College football was televised back in those days. I remember, I think my first 2 years, they televised the Bates-Bowdoin game. Because I remember the television station coming to practice and taking cameos of the starters and so forth. I think it was discontinued after that. It was a big deal back then. But I don't think we missed playing Maine or wanted to play Maine.
Right. And then your senior year, you actually played an extra game. You ended up being 5-4 that year. And you kind of knew the stakes. You had to win your last two to get four straight winning seasons. The team was pretty aware that was going to be historic if you could do it, right?
Well, I particularly remember, we had always played 8 games.
Yeah.
And we had been pretty successful against Bowdoin and Kobe, although our biggest loss freshman year was the last game against Kobe. We were 6-1, and they upset us.
Yeah.
Their quarterback, Lovejoy, threw then a 16 straight completions, which was an NCAA record at that time.
Oh, wow.
And then my senior year, disappointing, Bowdoin beat us on our home field. So we won the CBB sophomore and junior years, but not freshman and senior years. I do remember, I don't know how Coach Hatch picked up that last game, and I don't know why, but I'm guessing, you know, Bridgewater State needed a game, and they, Bates, you know, oh, yeah, we're open. I do remember on the bus ride to Bridgewater State, Coach Hatch, either on the bus ride or in the locker room, said, you realize that if we win this game, you will be the first class to have four straight winning seasons. And we won it like 35-12 or something like that. And I remember we won it convincingly that we seniors were pulled out in the fourth quarter. And so when I came out, I sat on the bench and cried because I knew it was the last football game I'll ever play.
What kind of tears are those? You're happy you're winning, you know, but you're also sad you'll never play again.
It was more sadness than happy we're winning because football had been such a encompassing thing in my life from my junior high days. You know, it was sadness, but I was fortunate. I was able to go on and become I coached a couple of years at Bates, and I coached 12, 13 years in high school football. And was fortunate to have some success there. And so football's been good to me.
When you coached at Bates, who did you coach with?
It was Bob Hatch's last year.
Oh, so the AIC win, 72?
Yeah, so I got out of the Navy in summer of 72. Came back from Vietnam, got out of the Navy, and came back, got a job at Edward Little High School. Mm-hmm. Well, they had no football coaching job, so I came over to see Coach Hatch and said, hey, I'd like to do something, I volunteer. And his assistant coach's positions were filled.
Yeah.
And so he says, well, what we can do is, Jeff, you be the scout, full-time scout for us and help us at practices, and I'll take the whole scout budget and give it to you as salary.
Okay.
So I was kind of an add-on. But it was great because I got to coach with the coaches I'd been with when I played. And it was a great education for an aspiring coach because – you had to be able to learn to see the field. And so as a scout, back in those days, you didn't scout on film. We didn't exchange films.
Right.
So I went to every game. And the only game I was at home, I was on the sideline with Bates, was the last game of the year.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And but it was a great education.
Yeah.
And I learned from Coach Hatch and Flynn and Leahy. And then that was Bob Hatch's last year. Mm-hmm. And Vic Gatto came on. And so I stayed around for Vic's first year here at Bates and was on the staff doing basically the same thing. But then after that, you know, Vic kind of brought in his own coaches. And so I went to the high school, coached some freshmen at Everett High School, which was great because they had a couple of state championships, the high school. And I coached a lot of those freshmen who won state championships a few years later. And then I got my own job at Oak Hill High School as a head coach and built the program there.
Nice. How did your time at Bates, your education at Bates, prepare you for your career?
I didn't decide what I wanted to be until my junior year, but I got a great liberal arts education here. I was a math major, and Bates also gave you enough opportunities for education courses so you get certified. So I did that, and, you know, I kind of went backwards. I wanted to be a teacher because I wanted to coach football.
Fair enough, yeah.
But I was a math major.
Yeah.
And math teachers are hard to find.
Yeah.
So the combination worked really well for me. And, you know, coming out of the Navy in the summer of 72, how do you get a job with a month to go before school starts? And fortunately, I was able to get one at EL real close, the school my parents graduated from, but which I did not graduate from.
Right.
Because I went to high school in Massachusetts. So, yeah, I've always felt that Bates gave me a great, well-rounded education. I was a math major, but I'm the one that did most of the writing for the schools. You know, I wrote some of the newsletters and stuff. I'm a pretty good writer, if I say so myself. And all of those courses helped me become, I think, a really well-rounded person and led to the opportunities I had in education to become an administrator and finally work at the state level for the Maine Principal Association running the tournaments and the academic portion too.
Well, and then also the class of 69, football-wise, is extremely close, it seems like. Maybe more so than any other class of Bates, I'm not sure, but in particular, very close group. Why do you think that is?
Well, for one thing, most of us were in two dorms.
Okay.
You know, we just checked it out. There were 11 of us who ended up going through the 4 years together. And Smith North and Roger Bill, which is now known as Roger Williams, which now is an academic building.
Right.
But back in our day, well, before we got here, Roger Bill was the administrative building where the president was. It became a dorm our freshman year. So half the football team was in Smith North together, and the other half seemed to be in Roger Bill. And we had a friendly rivalry. And so football players, they tended to room together or be in adjacent rooms and so forth. So, you know, and we all got, you know, we're very different people. I was one of the few who didn't room with a football player.
Oh.
But I was in Smith North. And it was a pretty close group. And I think that, you know, there was a lot of association off the field as well as on the field. And I think that led to the cohesion that helped us be a pretty good football team.
Who have you kept in touch with the most through the years?
Well, no one in particular, but you know, the Massachusetts guys mostly. we see each other, you know, Brownie.
Yep.
Well, of course, Jim Murphy was on campus a lot.
And yeah.
I see him because he was coaching soccer and women's basketball. And Dick Magnan, some of the Massachusetts guys, Walt Jackson, Tommy Lopez was a
long-time
much
coach.
Much yeah. more successful high school coach than I was.
Hall of Fame high school coach.
We'd get together mostly here on campus at reunions and stuff, or sometimes at games. You know, Tom's son played
for
Bates,
Mike Lopez,
I'd see them.
You guys are getting together this Friday. I know there's a reception of all the alums, not just 69, but all the alums. What are you most looking forward to about, you know, seeing a bunch of guys together who had similar experiences here, right?
Yeah, you know, probably relive the old times. And I don't know. I don't know what you have prepared for us. I don't know whether they're going to be.
I prepared something.
I don't know what kind of visual accoutrement to the, you know, whether it's exhibits or something on the video screen or something. But I did provide you with
yes.
with a lot of game
and
film.
It was used.
So hopefully you put that to good use. And I think it was our 25th reunion. I sponsored a football thing in the Den, and you know we had the games up on the wall
yeah.
as we socialized and so forth. So it's kind of fun to see how we played, and then you realize how much football has changed from yeah. the days we played.
Well, I was just watching. Yeah, I watched the film you gave me a lot of it, and you know, yeah, you're right about Carr. He was huge. Like it's obvious who yeah. he is yeah. on the yeah. field. Yeah. And then you know, you look at you know Murphy. Yeah, he could really throw it. I mean, he was perfectly leading receivers and threw to double coverage a few times, but it was pretty
you
good.
You know, Murphy and Lopez. Lopez ran a 10-yard sideline. Honest to goodness. Whether it was practice or a game, they would never miss.
Yeah.
Tom was tall, lanky. He was not fast, but he ran good routes, and he had great hands. And Murph always could throw it right where Tom was the only person who could catch it. You know, the interesting thing, too, you know, coulda, woulda, shoulda, as successful as we could have been so much better because, you know, our class, we had guys on offense and defense, but we didn't have any running backs in my class. But our sophomore year, Donnie Hanson from York, Maine, and Sandy Nesbitt from Brunswick
yeah.
were on the team. And ironically, Donnie started ahead of Sandy.
Mm.
But we went to St. Lawrence University, and we were down 19-0 at the half. And we won 33-19, I believe was the score. And Sandy Nesbitt had 3 or 4 touchdowns, a couple of long runs, and 1 or 2 punt returns. But here's the coulda, woulda, shoulda part of it. Don injured his foot that year, played for 4 years. I think it was what we'd call turf toe or something.
Yeah.
And really, he was so good, and he couldn't live up to that. Ended up being punting, I think, mostly. And Sandy Nesbitt.
With an injured foot, he was punting? Maybe it was
well,
foot.
You know, yeah, yeah. He couldn't cut with it, but he could.
Right.
And Sandy was just an outstanding
yeah.
back. But he got hurt. I think our junior year, his sophomore year, he was pretty good health-wise. But if we'd have could have kept those two guys on the field together
yeah.
for the remaining 3 years we had, we would have won a few more ball games. We just didn't have the breakaway backs
yeah.
That Sandy would have provided, or the great back who could pick up 5, 6, 7 yards at a time like Donnie could have done.
Yeah. Well, Nesbitt had that 96-yard run against Middlebury, which unfortunately on the DVD it's not on there.
Really?
I watched the whole thing; it's not there. I'm like, oh, but I wish I'd seen it. But yeah, he obviously explosive back. He was, I think. Class of 70, because in 1969, the year after you graduated, they started 3-0.
They started 3-0.
And then he got hurt.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
That's yeah, yeah. And I was, you know, you mentioned that because I joined the football staff in 72.
Yeah.
And that was their long losing streak. It started in 70. And I remember, I think I was scouting over in Vermont, maybe at Middlebury or Norwich, and I think I was scouting with Frank McGinty, who was the linebacker who was a year behind us.
Okay.
He was small, but he was tough.
Yeah.
And so Frank and I were scouting together, and we had the radio tuned to the football scores. And when we came back, we almost went off the road when we heard that Bates had beaten AIC to
yeah.
break that streak. I think it was 17-14.
Yep.
It was a field goal.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was a pleasant memory and a long line of unpleasant memories.
Right, a little tough era there in the early 70s. But, yeah, that was a massive win because AIC, I mean, they were a really good program. I mean, that was not like
– Yeah, we played AIC, yep. and they had a good back, Delahanty? They had a good back who went and played in the NFL.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In those times. And so they were a tough team, yeah. and I can't remember precisely. I think we beat them once or twice in those years.
I think you beat them in 66, maybe. Yeah.
The team that we had a hard time with was Trinity. Gee, we had a hard time.
That's a common experience as a Bobcat.
And you know, our score, we could always score against them, but we couldn't stop them.
Mm.
And some of our scores, you know, and I'm working from memory, but, you know, may have been like 52-45 or something like that.
High-scoring games.
High-scoring games. But defensively, we weren't quite as good as we were offensively.
Mm.
And so the teams that had good offenses gave us a hard time.
Well, any other thoughts you wanted to share on your time at Bates, you know, the 150 years of Bates football, you know, anything else you wanted to mention we aren't going to talk about?
In a way, it's hard being a Bates football fan because we don't have the sterling record that some schools do. But for me and the guys who played here at Bates, it was very meaningful and important experience. And I think it's worthwhile, the effort is worthwhile, and hopefully we can get better as we go along. And, you know, the tension was always between how can you get good students who are also good athletes. And especially Bates, Bowdoin, and Colby up here in Maine, we're competing against the Massachusetts schools, you know, Williams, Wesleyan's Connecticut, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Trinity, Amherst, Tufts. And it's hard to get some good athletes to come up here to the wilds of Maine with the windows we have. You know, we always try to get skiers, football players who also skied, you know. So it's always been difficult.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the Bobcast. We're looking forward to this weekend, Friday and Saturday, lots of festivities around 150 years of Bates football. And I'm sure I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much.
Well, thanks.
Next time on the Bates Bobcast, we'll recap the season opener for the football team and wrap up our fall sports previews with men's tennis and golf, both of whom start next week. In the meantime, check out GoBatesBobcats.com for all the latest Bates athletics news, and we'll catch you next time on the Bates Bobcast.